I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi there, this is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for joining us for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. Every day around this time, we spend about 20 minutes or so with two doctors talking about coronavirus and COVID-19. We'll get to our regular guests, Lou Cares Dr. Fred Buchholz, in a bit. But first, I wanted to talk with Dr. Jason Newland. Dr. Newland is a Washington University infectious diseases specialist at St. Louis Children's Hospital. Dr. Newland, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Fred. Glad to be here.
Dr. Newland, what advice do you have for us with so many things reopening this past week in the St. Louis area? Salons, restaurants, offices. What do we need to know to stay safe?
Fred, the things we have to do to stay safe is the same things we've been doing. Number one, we got to social distance. We can go out now and there's more places open, but we still recommend social distancing. Number two, we still need to remember about washing our hands, washing them effectively, making sure that we're using soap and water or 60% alcohol. We rub all the surfaces, including in between our fingers and our thumbs. Number three, avoiding touching our face. And number four, I highly recommend you wear a mask if you can't social distance. That can be a cloth-based mask. These sorts of things will keep us protected, and I think we should be doing that at this point in time.
Are there certain places you think we should avoid to be extra safe?
To be extra safe, you avoid places that are going to be gatherings, right? This virus, it's important to know that this virus spreads by people. And that people don't have to be sick. They can just have, be talking, and that could have virus that could spread. And so doing things like wearing the mask, washing your hands, and avoiding these areas that there's more gathering is, I think, a big key.
And with the long Memorial Day weekend here, what do we need to keep in mind?
The Memorial Day weekend is such a great holiday. The main things we need to do is, number one, do the practices that we've been doing. And I know people are going to want to go out and spend time with their loved ones and some friends. I think we have to limit the gatherings. It's okay now to start talking about maybe expanding our circle. But we have to remember that there is risk when we start being around more people. I think if we know that our loved ones and family have been, doing the same social distancing practices, not going out, doing the stay-at-home order, I think they're going to be safe to be around. Though, again, anytime we start getting in bigger groups, there is some risk to that.
Is it okay to go on a short road trip?
Yes, it is okay to go on a short road trip. The things to remember are still social distancing, washing your hands. I'd wear a mask when it's hard to social distance or when you're going to be in a little bit more groups of people. And also just being mindful of, wiping down surfaces if need be and not touching your face.
What about a barbecue with friends?
I love barbecues. I think we all want to do the barbecues. I think these friends that are close friends that have been doing the social distancing practices and doing the things that you have been doing to prevent yourself from getting the virus, I think it's okay. But I wouldn't be talking about a large group. It might be one or two friends and a smaller group that will practice some of this distancing and do some things together. I think it's probably okay at this point.
We're talking with Dr. Jason Newland. Dr. Newland is a Washington University infectious diseases specialist at St. Louis Children's Hospital. Dr. Newland, the CDC now says that coronavirus or COVID-19 does not seem to survive well on surfaces or objects. With that in mind, what do you think about wearing gloves when we shop or wiping down all of our food once we buy it?
I don't think you have to wear gloves when you shop. I don't think you have to wipe down the food. But what I would tell you is important to remember is that the primary reason this virus is spread is people. We do know that the virus could be on a surface. While it might not live as long as we initially thought, you could potentially touch a surface that has a lot of virus and then touch your face and get the virus. So the key is still to wash your hands effectively. Doing that will help, as well as wiping down some of these surfaces that potentially are a place that there could be a lot of stuff on it. And I think that's still the way to go at this point.
Any other tips we need to keep in mind?
I think the biggest tips, I'm going to stress, social distance when you can. Wear a mask out there in public when that social distance is going to be harder. And I think that we need to be just kind of getting used to that for the time being. Number three would be avoid touching your face. And number four, let's just remember to work together and know what that we're all in this together. And by working together, we're going to get through this much quicker than if we don't.
Dr. Newland, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Fred, I appreciate you, man. You guys are doing great work. So thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Jason Newland is a Washington University infectious diseases specialist at St. Louis Children's Hospital. Now, let's turn to Dr. Fred Buchold. Dr. Buchold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchold, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
Hey, Dr. Buchold, just wanted to let you know, today marks our 50th podcast on coronavirus. So thanks so much. We've been talking about this for 10 straight weeks now, 5 podcasts every week. Thank you so much for all the time you spend with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to people about this and hopefully allayed some concerns and fears that all of us have had as we've learned about this.
Wanted to bring up with you some new findings from the CDC. First, we've got some new CDC numbers on the mortality rate for COVID-19. It's 0.4%. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that seems in line with what I think most people kind of thought. When we first started hearing about this, the concern was a 2% fatality rate. And mortality rate is always the number of people that pass divided by the number of people that have the disease. It's a simple fraction. The issue with all that is always figuring out what the denominator, the lower number, is. And, as we find out, there's a lot of asymptomatic carriers of this disease, which gives you a larger denominator. You just don't know about it. And as we've, honed our models and our testing and started to get a better idea of the scope and nature of this, that number going down is not a surprise. And it's consistent with most other viral infections, maybe a little bit more than others, but seems a more reasonable number. And I can't remember the fatality rate of the flu. I think it's about 0.1%. It's lower than that. So, COVID still may be more fatal than some of the more common things we see, but not that 2%, which is a shockingly high number. So that's good to see.
And 35% of coronavirus infections are asymptomatic, according to the CDC.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful number, and I think those estimates have varied quite a bit, and it's, that seems kind of in line with what makes some sense with based on previous experience, but, I think there's probably, that still is quite a guesstimate, and there's probably a pretty broad range of that number. I mean, it could be much higher, it could be a little bit lower.
The CDC also has some new findings or advice on transmission of the virus. It says it does not survive well on surfaces and objects, mainly spread by physical exposure. What do we do with that information?
Yeah, and again, I think this goes along with what we know about other viruses of the species. Coronavirus is typically a respiratory pathogen and distributed by, respiratory spread. So breathing, coughing, sneezing, anything that can come out of your mouth and nostrils. There's lots of good studies now that have shown that it does survive on surfaces to varying lengths, but there's a couple key principles of getting infected. It's not even just being exposed to the virus. That's the first part. You have to be exposed in order to get an infection. The second important component is just how much of the viral particles you're getting. So there's certainly a higher concentration in respiratory spread than, something on the surface. And if you think about it, if you have, say, let's just say a keyboard that somebody coughed on. So there's virus on your keyboard. You're touching with your fingers, and then somehow the fingers have to bring your fingers to your face and inoculate enough of that from the keyboard to your fingers, to your mouth at a high concentration to get you sick. And that there's just kind of more steps in that process for that to really kind of transmit an effective dose. Is it possible? Sure. It just probably is not the most common way this is spread. It seems very clear now that this is certainly the usual suspects, sneezing, coughing, et cetera. But as we've talked before, the breathing, kind of a prolonged contact in a poorly ventilated area where somebody may even have an asymptomatic carrier that's just breathing. And if you've been in that environment for a long amount of time, that certainly probably provides enough inoculation or exposure to the proper number of viruses to get you sick. And that seems to be the case. And again, big examples are the church in South Korea, where there's a couple of people sick. They got pretty much everybody in that congregation sick. The soccer match in Italy, in Milan, that who knows how many people were sick, but that seems to be the nidus for the massive outbreak in Milan. Those are the types of environments where this kind of really spreads like wildfire.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, I'm hearing about COVID-19 causing delirium in some patients. What are you seeing?
Yeah, this doesn't shock at all. And I think it kind of goes back to the same thing with the respiratory complications we talked about briefly yesterday is, again, with people in the ICU, not only, again, even if you don't have that ventilator to help you breathe, you're in a very confusing environment. Night becomes day and day becomes night. You're on a lot of medicines, either to keep your blood pressure up, give me antibiotics, you're giving medicines to kind of calm you down. And, there's bells and whistles and commotion. It's a very busy kind of complex place, and it can be disorienting to people when they're ill. And illness itself creates disorientation. And the medical word for this is delirium. And so that's all part of ICU care. It's it's very, very common just by itself. And then, you add a kind of a novel disease like COVID that's shown a lot of secondary effects. And, certainly the fact that it causes delirium is not surprising. The million-dollar question behind all this is it due to COVID? Is it due to the ICU? Is it due to, severe illness or some combination thereof? And, that's probably the right answer. And so it's certainly something that's possible, certainly something that we see. Certainly something that when you have delirium, your outcomes tend to be a little bit worse. And frankly, recovery is afterwards. There's good studies that show that when you have delirium in the ICU, if you recover and you get out of the ICU and you eventually get back to your normal state of health, your cognitive ability will have declined compared to where you were before getting ill. And that's not just in COVID. That's in really more in anybody that has this concept of delirium in a hospital. And so it just shows all these kind of long-term consequences to expect out of this eventually as a result of this pandemic. I mean, it's going to be kind of, we talk a lot about mortality, which is people dying from the disease, but there's also this concept of morbidity, which is, complications from disease afterwards that we still have to provide care for. People will need rehab and therapy and all these different things to try to get them back to a functional status. And it's going to take time for a lot of people.
Delirium aside, are you seeing anxiety in hospitalized patients? I mean, they're there alone in the hospital dealing with this. How do you treat that, or how do you deal with it?
Well, yeah, it's another great question. I mean, I think I mentioned this at some point in the past of, the great tragedy to me, I think one of the hardest things I see in my work in a hospital is when a patient's dying and they're alone. They're estranged from their family, or they don't have relatives and they're just there by themselves. We actually have some programs where, the concept of nobody dies alone. And so people will come and visit the patient and, provide some degree of companionship as they go towards their passing. But none of that is available right now. Most hospitals in the region, if not in the country, have very strict visitor policies. And so even if you're sick or you're on your own, contact with your loved ones or face-to-face time with your loved ones is insanely hard. It's not impossible. And that doesn't help. We all need that connection, and that helps with our own recovery. And, if you're missing that can lead to a lot of consequences. I mean, everybody here is, has been socially isolated for the most part for the last, 2 months. And I don't know about everybody else, but, we've struggled with that in my own household, my own family. And I haven't seen my parents face-to-face or given my parents a hug in 8 weeks. That's hard. Add illness and death and all these complicated, terrible things. And I just can't imagine how much more difficult that is. And it's hard to see. It's hard for people to deal with. It's hard for healthcare providers to deal with that, see that, and, try to accommodate and help with that as much as we can. But just it's just another kind of downstream unforeseen consequence of this. It's really, really difficult and hard.
Dr. Buchholz, what are you hearing from your interns right now? Are any of them saying I'm rethinking my profession, or at least I'm rethinking my area of expertise as we go forward?
You know, that's a great question. I don't think people are rethinking their profession. I think, you know, again, this is in kind of a macabre way. This is what we're, you know, this is what we want to do. If anything, I've had a fair amount of people like kind of feel like they're missing out if they don't get to do some ITU time, you know, because to train during this and to have that experience, I think is, you know, very formative and important. And, you know, I'm a very lucky human being. My residents, my interns are just an absolutely fantastic group of people. They're brilliant and hardworking, and you know, really, if this represents the future of this country, I think we're in good shape. You know, they're mad when they're not. You know, with a couple of them gotten sick, and they feel like they're letting their colleagues down because we have to cover each other. And you know, to be, you know, involved with a group like that is just, it just shows, you know, the type of people that go into internal medicine and want to provide care. You know, we walk into this just like our nurses and our colleagues in surgery and anesthesia who have just done a phenomenal job stepping up to the plate to take care of people. So I don't think it's made people rethink. I'm very curious going forward. You know, medical schools are just now, you know, just graduated. Their most recent crop of graduates, they're getting ready to start internship in July. The medical, you know, the current students that are ready to graduate next year are starting to think about what they want to do with their lives and you know, start to apply for what we call residency. And I'm curious to see what that looks like. It's been a very uncertain time for all of us and what the future of medicine will look like. Does this drive more people to go into these specialties like medicine or critical care, or does it make people stay away? I think that's going to be a phenomenally interesting question. And so, you know, that's the part I'm really curious about. But the people that decide this, you know, they do it because it calls to them and they think it's work that they love and enjoy, just like myself. And, you know, I think there's very much an urge to continue to do this and continue to work for our patients.
Dr. Buchholz, I have a listener question for you. This listener writes, with swimming pools possibly opening up in July in St. Louis City and County, what do I need to know to be safe at a pool?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think still the kind of combined prolonged exposure to others in a semi-crowded environment seems to be how this spread. And I'll add to that, you know, we don't know who does and who doesn't have this disease or maybe asymptomatic carriers. You know, it sounds like if you were to do this, that a lot of things would need to be put in place to keep people separate. You know, in a general pool where a bunch of kids and parents and everybody else is playing, I'm curious how that's going to be enforced and regulated. I suspect pools will limit the amount of patrons that will come in, you know, just like it's happening at sometimes with stores and other things as well. But it's one of those things of it's a trade-off between, you know, trying to enjoy the pleasures of summer and, you know, going to the pool is definitely one of those versus our own public safety. And I don't know what the right answer is. I'm not sure it's something I want to do with my kids as much as I want to, until we have a better sense of where things go. But I imagine they're going to have to put some strict measures in. I don't know how they're going to be enforced altogether. And bear in mind, it doesn't seem like, you know, this is like, I don't think coronavirus is transmitted readily in the water. I don't think it's anything like that. I just think it's going to be the number of people in a public pool, and how you regulate that and keep everybody separate, I think will take a lot of work. So I'm curious how that's going to look.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. It's been an interesting 10 weeks, that's for sure. So I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU Care General Internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. And that's all the time we have for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks so much for listening. Please join us again on Monday for another episode of Coronavirus Facts Only.